Hello, fellow movie friends. I'm Lily Percy, and I'll be your guide this week as I talk with poet Nick George about the movie that changed his life, Brown Sugar. It's okay if you've never seen the movie. We're going to give you all the details you need to follow along and get ready to enjoy some classic hip hop.
My Mellow, my man.
Yo.
Get on the mic and rock this jam.
Well, I was on the 41 bus reading the news. Woo! Here comes grandma and she steps on my shoes. Smile. Although I was quite disgusted. I said, what's the matter, granny? Is your blind ass dust?
The day I saw Slick Rick, who went by Ricky D back then, Dana Dane and Dougie Fresh battle in the Bronx was the day I truly met hip hop. Little did I know, a year later, Ricky D would join the Get Fresh crew and record the hip-hop classic, The Show. And of course, the B-side, Lottie Dottie. Hip-hop was as young, naive, confused, sometimes innocent, and sometimes as mischievous as I was. And as I grew up...
Later, Dre. Later, Sid.
Hip-hop grew with me. And along the way, it took on all my baggage. My dreams. I felt hip-hop, and hip-hop felt me.
Yo, good evening, ladies and gents, close and distant fam. Let me break it down for y'all exactly who I am.
When I first saw Brown Sugar, I was completely taken over by the music, of course. It's the first thing you notice about the movie. The wonderful tribute to hip-hop, an ode, love letter, however you want to call it, to hip-hop that permeates every scene in the movie.
I rock like this because I ain't that. Tell the players I'm taking the game back.
But the thing that really carried me through watching it over and over and over again was the relationship between Sydney, played by Sanaa Lathan, and Dre, played by Taye Diggs. Their relationship is as equals. It's not something I grew up watching in rom-coms. It's not something that I saw. Men and women respecting each other, talking to each other as if they both believed each other to be intelligent, equal human beings. And their relationship gave me hope for what love could be.
I swear, I still feel like we're just those two kids pop-locking at the block parties. You remember my first little beat machine?
Boy, you thought you were D-Nice.
The TR-808. What's this? Simplicity provides a fine line between eloquence and plainness. That's a dope line.
That was my first published article.
I can't wait for your book to come out. When you left, I went out, got the LA Times every Wednesday for your column. I'm gonna go to the park and read it. I don't know, it's made me feel closer to you.
Yeah, yeah, of love, brown sugar.
So we begin the movie with Sydney and Dre as kids, first learning and falling in love with hip-hop. And this love of hip-hop is what connects them throughout their life. Sydney becomes a writer and editor of Powerhouse Hip-Hop Magazine. And Dre gets into the recording industry. He is the man behind the artists. And he gets into this field because of his love of hip-hop, but both Sydney and Dre are struggling to reconcile this idyllic love that they have of hip-hop with the reality.
Did you sign a new act without consulting me?
Dre, I saw him and I had to sign him. I had never seen no shit like that. A black and white rapping duo. I know they gonna hit.
Come on, man, you know that's just a gimmick. I mean, these guys, they have like no skills. They're just straight up white. Now, I saw last night a real MC. This cat deserves a shot. He came with the real, original, real hip-hop.
I don't give a damn. I'm trying to sell records to people who are actually buying them. So I need a group who's going to be able to get me that MTV rotation, baby. Now, Ben and Ken.
Rep, Ren, and Ten.
They the future, baby. Now, Eminem, he paved the way. They going to be like Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder. You know? Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson. Woo!
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's tight.
You really want me to do this?
Well, if you want to work for Millennium Records, that's what we do here. We make hits.
As we see hip-hop grow and change, we also see Sydney and Dre grow and change. And it was this intertwining of love and hip-hop that really spoke to poet Nick George. In fact, when our lead producer, Maya, emailed him to talk about Brown Sugar, he had this to say. When I first saw Brown Sugar, both love and hip-hop were new things to me. I thought I understood both, I also thought that their utility in my life was simple. And yet through this movie, it became apparent that both are unpredictable. One of the major themes is evolution and allowing a thing to grow beyond what we thought we knew about it. I'm going to take you back in time by asking you to think about the first time that you saw Brown Sugar. Where you were, how old you were, all the circumstances that surrounded it, maybe the people you were with. Just take 10 seconds to close your eyes and think about that moment when you first saw it, and then I will prompt you when the 10 seconds are up.
All right.
So what memories came up for you?
College.
College.
Which is a very broad perspective to come from. But yeah, I was an undergrad and it was probably during one of the holiday breaks and I didn't have a car. So I was walking to Walmart and I said, okay, I got cereal, I got milk. Now I need something to watch. And I heard of the film, but I hadn't like seen it in theater. So I got it on DVD.
Had you heard of the film because of the soundtrack or because I know you love hip hop? Is that why you had heard of it or?
I was actually skeptical because of how much I love hip hop. I was skeptical on how they would handle it. But it was Walmart. So I said, you know, I'm not really losing out here. And if it sucks, I have a new coaster.
There you go.
I've started every interview I've ever given the same way for over 10 years. So, when did you fall in love with hip hop?
I basically fell in love with hip hop, you know what I'm saying? When cats first started going out to the parks. You know, with the two turntables, the mic.
I think it was 1977.
People are rocking in the parks.
I can remember back in the Bronx, 1979.
Set up some turntables in front of the building.
And it was getting the power from the street lamps outside.
Plugged it up into the street pole.
MC and DJ and B-boy and breakdancing.
Breakdancing or popping beats.
What did you end up thinking about it when it came to its... treatment of hip-hop? I mean, hip-hop is another character in the movie. I mean, the movie starts out with... Sanaa Lathan's character, Sydney, talking about when she first fell in love with hip-hop. Not when she first fell in love, when she first fell in love with hip-hop. So as someone who also loved that genre, what did it speak to you? What did you think in that moment when you were a college student watching it?
I think that set things off for me to dig deeper into hip-hop because it helped personify it in a way. Growing up... my dad was not with hip hop at all, at all. Keep in mind, this is like during the 90s and gangster rap was massive strength. The culture was still kind of learning its way, but bold enough to just stand out there and not care. And I can say now as a parent, I get it.
Yeah,
I get it. But when you're dealing with like this unknown force, this unknown culture, you want to protect your kids.
And also what was being represented about hip hop, right? In gangster rap,
that's
in particular, that you're talking about. Yeah, the misrepresentation of it.
Right. Or maybe the isolation of it, because that's not like it wasn't true.
Good point. Yeah.
You know, like these stories are true.
Mm-hmm.
But because of, I guess, marketing or whatever, it was gridlocked and isolated in such a way. And my exposure to hip hop wasn't all the way there. I think the first time I got a real taste of hip hop, it was at my grandmother's house. And my cousin, he had a copy of Biggie's album. And I think he was playing Notorious Thugs. And just the rhyme, I'm listening to it in my head right now. Oh, then Dangerous. And like...
All the dangerous, ain't too many can bang with us. Straight up, we no angel dust. Label us notorious. Thug ass niggas that love the bus. It's strange to us. Y'all niggas be scrambling, gambling. I'm restaurants with
that was my first time hearing anything like this. And I remember having all these. Is he allowed to say that? Is he allowed to talk like that? He's talking really fast, but it still makes sense. It's musical. Can you do that? And it's being blown. And I think how this film handled hip hop. There's no way they could have covered all of it.
Yeah.
But I think with what they were trying to do, they took a very decent approach in looking at the heart of hip hop.
Well, and I love that it takes it seriously. That's one of the things that in rewatching the movie this week, getting ready to talk to you, I was like, I don't think I appreciated that before enough, how seriously it takes it, right? Sydney has this narration all throughout the movie where she keeps returning to what makes hip hop so important to her and what it's given to her. And I love these lines where she says, like, for many people, hip hop was that first friend, the first to talk to us, the first to understand. Hip hop has always been that kind of friend to me. And like any relationship, I've watched it grow. I've watched it change. It's just beautiful because it's talking about that evolution of the genre, but then also her own evolution, right? As a person, as a woman, and then her relationship with Dre, their own friendship and the love that's kind of blossoming.
Right. I didn't think of hip hop in terms of love early on.
Mm.
It was more like that friend that was always going to get you in trouble, but knew you better than anyone.
Yeah.
At least that's how that relationship was. You know, I couldn't bring any old music into the house.
Mm.
But when I was able to hear it, and I was able to listen to it, it was something else. And I think one of the things that's continued throughout hip hop's growth is its ability to kind of still be true, like still be real. I think this ongoing conversation in hip hop's growth and in hip hop's maturity as to what it is. And we go through that too, right? As
we
grow and we go through childhood and adolescence and, you know, the hellhole known as the teenage years. And then we arrive at adulthood. And throughout all of that, we still are trying to figure out what this identity is. And I think hip hop's been around maybe as long as I have, maybe a little bit more. Like hip hop is maybe on the early stages of middle age.
Hmm.
And you would think that it's completely arrived. But how many people do we know in that same age range that are struggling with identity crises, that with struggling with just that midlife crisis? I think hip hop is in that place where it's trying to remember and trying to stay true to what it is, but still push forward and still be.
Hmm.
You know, I don't think it's done, but I don't think it's any one thing. Fortunately, this film was respectful of that by staying true to the art of it, recognizing that growth, recognizing that transition does happen and will continue to happen, but sticking with what made it a thing in the first place.
For many people, hip hop was that first friend. The first to talk to us. The first to understand. Hip hop has always been that kind of friend to me. And like any relationship, I've watched it grow. I've watched it change.
You know, reading a bunch of reviews about Brown Sugar, which was interesting for me because, you know, the movie came out in 2002. I thought it came out in the mid 90s because that's when I equate what I equate with it. mid to late 90s. I was really fascinated by how many critics kept talking about how kind of precious it was and how naive and idealistic. And it was fascinating to me because I'm like, I think that's actually when I listen to the hip hop of my youth and the artists that I love, like Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul and even the Beastie Boys, which I love that they name check in the movie. It feels idealistic, but what's wrong with that? Like, that is part of growth, right? That's part of being a human being. You go through stages where you are more idealistic than others, but hopefully you retain some of that. And I think in so many ways, the characters of Dre and Sydney, they're trying to hold on to their idealism despite what the world is throwing at them.
Right. And I definitely, I think I have that appreciation for their characters now because I am an adult now.
Yeah, you're in your 30s now. You're older than they were in that movie.
Know, dude,
doesn't that blow your mind?
So weird. But I definitely am an idealist in that way because, you know, I grew up in that type of experimentation, that jazz beat break 80s influenced kind of being so informed by the traditions of the past and charging forward with that new energy. So anything that sounds like that, you know, I grew up obviously loving Biggie. I was a major fan of Will Smith, like people clown him, but he's one of the OGs of the game, if you will.
He's so talented.
He's an amazingly talented writer. And if you're just talking about bars, like he has bars mm-hmm. for days. I grew up once getting into hip hop, digging deep, you know, loving Mos Def, Talib, Immortal Technique, Dead Prez, Tribe, Busta Rhymes, like, and moving up with it. But with that, you have to have some flexibility.
Yeah.
And know what's called for in your life and what you need in your life in that moment. You know, there are times in a car where I need a Busta Rhymes moment, but there's also times when I need Joey Badass, or this moment might call for Kendrick, or maybe I don't need any of that and I need some Thelonious Monk.
Yeah.
You know, and that's tricky.
When did you realize, because you yourself are a poet, when did you realize that what you're talking about, what these artists do, was poetry? When did you make that connection?
I don't think I made it by myself. I struggled in middle school and high school with thoughts and attempts of suicide. And I will never forget at Sacred Heart School in Vailsburg, New Jersey, in Essex County, my guidance counselor, Mr. Beckworth, asked me if I had ever heard of Maya Angelou. And I think I had, but not really paying attention to it. So he suggested I read some of her poetry. And from then on, I was in that world of poetry, of using language to communicate something that basic sentence structure couldn't do.
Yeah.
And with that, I ventured into the local open mic scene, and I started to witness people, poets, come to the microphone with poems that sounded a lot like rap.
Yeah.
So how were they able to do this? Right? Like, how could you do this? Are you rapping? Or is that a poem? Or like, what do you call this? And then, you know, being a part of that culture and being a part of that community, I was able to see that connection a little bit more physically. I think one of the things that this film really helped me see was, in addition to like arriving at the heart of hip hop, because you saw that kind of echoed with Sidney and Dre's relationship.
Yeah.
That it's more than just saying, I like you and you like me. Like, there's an actual back and forth. There's a tango.
Yeah.
And learning that, learning the language of it and spending the time with it pulls on different parts of your intellect and your emotions as well.
Guess what demo I heard for our unsigned underground review today?
Are you serious?
Dre, don't act like you didn't plan this. You know the editor does the unsigned reviews.
Man, why would I need the plan? I could have just given it to you at any time. I was hoping it got the double XL because the shit's tight, not because I know you.
Well, I'm not doing the review. I gave it to Gabe.
Well, what did Gabe say?
It wasn't a bad review.
He dissed us.
He didn't diss it. He just wasn't feeling it.
Sid, you got to step in. You got to do your thing, your editor. I mean, you heard the CD.
I can't do that, Dre. I can't step on his
Sid,
review.
Sid, you're the main person that's talking about hip-hop losing its way and how we got to get back to its roots. What's wrong with getting in touch with why we both fell in love with hip-hop in the first place?
Because it's about forward movement. Innovate and move on.
One minute you're talking about you want things to change, and the next minute you're talking about you want things to stay the same.
I do want things to change. I just don't like how things have changed. And I didn't know this is how it would turn out.
And that's why we need to look back, okay? Because if we look back, then it will make us see things, the mistakes we've made, things that we never knew were there before. And if we just can stop, then maybe we can find that thing that we both know is missing,
right,
and build on that.
Are we still talking about hip hop?
That's all we've ever talked about.
What's a song you've shared with someone you love? This week in our newsletter, we're asking subscribers to share a song for a playlist inspired by this conversation with Nick George on Brown Sugar. To add to the playlist, look for those instructions in your inbox or sign up at onbeing.org/TMCM letter. One of my favorite things about Brown Sugar is how it juxtaposes the love that both Sidney and Dre have for hip hop with the love that they have for each other. And I'm just curious how this movie shaped the way you viewed love in your own life. Clearly it did.
Well, I wasn't married when I first saw it, but I knew that after seeing this movie, I couldn't be with anyone that didn't love music. I'm not excluding everything else, like hip hop, definitely, but had an appreciation and an awareness of music and art and all of those things. You know, that had to be a part of how we connected, because I couldn't imagine being in a relationship with like Nicole Ari Parker's character.
Yeah.
You know, like she was a beautiful person. She was talented. She was all of these great things, but couldn't connect with Dre.
Yeah.
On this quote unquote hip hop thing.
Yep.
I'll let you know, I was offended when she said that. Like, how could you say something like that? Like, yeah. You obviously don't know what you're talking about. You're
exactly.
Obviously not about that life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when talking about love and relationships, obviously it was a movie, so it had to be presented in a certain way. But for all the things that marriage and relationships can be, I think it's a beautiful thing when they are on the same page and on the same wavelength. And I think for me, I knew after seeing this film, like, okay, we've got to agree on this. If I say we have a chance to go and see Chance the Rapper in concert, I need you to be as excited as me.
Yep.
I can't walk into this by myself and you're just there to be polite. Like, no, we need to vibe out and we need to rock hard to this, because we need to breathe the same way when this is in the atmosphere.
Mm.
You know, we need to feel that synergy and that connectedness. And maybe we grow at different paces. Since then, I've managed to catch the eye of a tall South Carolinian girl and she still likes me. So that's cool.
But does she like hip hop? That's the question.
That is the question. And I think safe to say she does. I didn't use that example arbitrarily. Like, we went to see Chance last year and it was great. It was great. And to be able to, you know, drive home and have that memory, that shared memory together.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine not going to this concert without her. You know, and I think, like, the scene where they were on the park bench.
And you don't stop. And 1-2 come, says the beast a sure shot.
Come on, Dre. It's common sense. I used to love her.
Damn.
And they were sharing the lines to Common's I Used to Love Her.
I love that scene.
I met this girl when I was 10 years old.
And what I love most, she has so much soul. She was old school when
and I was just a shorty.
Never knew throughout my life she would be there for me.
That was such a musical scene, such a lovely scene, such a magical scene. It's such a simple scene, too.
That song reminded me of us.
It does?
Yeah, back in the day. You remember that feeling? Just how hip-hop used to make you feel, especially back then.
It was so real. It was like air. You remember how you felt?
The first time you heard "The Bridge Is Over."
Oh.
The first time.
Yep.
That was real.
Ooh, or "You Got to Chill."
With
the sophomore skate party.
Yeah, so true to life, right? That you do that with your friends who also love the same music you do. You recite lyrics. You talk about, remember when we heard that song? Remember when we saw that band, that artist in concert?
Can I share a story?
Yeah, please do.
So when we started dating, there was a mixtape released by DJ J Period. It was a collection of the best of Lauryn Hill. And I told her about it. As a matter of fact, no, we weren't even dating. Oh, man, I'm messing the story up. We weren't dating yet. She was dating this other guy. But we were friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she was like the only person I told about it that was like as hype as I was. Like, dude, we got to get this mixtape. Hers came in the mail, and I remember clearly going with her to the mailbox to get it, and we were so hyped about it, and I think her boyfriend was with her there, and me and her were like geeking out, and I think he was kind of like, oh, all right. But just like having that moment to this day, like it's like I think one of our most treasured memories that was there in our friendship. You know, it wasn't a romance thing. I wasn't trying to get in her pants. Well, not yet, but
maybe not vocally, not consciously.
At that moment.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it was just like excitement about, and it was such a great mixtape. Like, it's such a well done mixtape that covers like her whole discography, her time with the Fugees, unreleased stuff, live stuff, interviews and stuff. Like, it's a great mixtape. And we both love her as an artist. So it was like all this amazing stuff in this one neat package, and to be able to have someone to share that with.
Yeah.
I think that was our park bench moment.
That's lovely. That's so lovely. You know, that's one of the things that I love the most about Brown Sugar is that excitement that they capture in their relationship of when, you know, Dre has to go see an artist or anything to do with music. They're each other's phone call, right? They're the first people that they call to share that excitement with.
Right.
So I have to talk about Queen Latifah because she is one of my heroes, and she has some of the best lines in this movie.
Indeed.
And so one of my favorite lines that I often think about actually is the, you're turning into a Terry McMillan character, which she plays Sydney's cousin when she tells her that, because she is becoming a Terry McMillan character. And I'm just curious about your favorite characters, your favorite lines. I mean, you mentioned the park bench moment, which is such a great moment in the movie. But what are the things that you kind of always turn in your mind to when you think about Brown Sugar?
I think Mos Def's character, I think his name was like Cabby.
Yeah, yeah. Because he was a cabbie.
Right. I think his character stands out the most to me. I think he was like the hip hop Jiminy Cricket of the movie.
I think he would really appreciate that. Because there's some things, there are comparisons that he makes and lines that he says to Dre's character, to Taye Diggs' character, that I'm like, he is such a poet.
I think he holds it down in that respect for reminding not just Dre, but the audience, and kind of like calling them out, kind of being the conscience in the room. Like just like, so like, what are you doing, dude?
Yeah.
You know that's trash. You know you shouldn't be doing this. But at the same time, human enough to not know how to step to Francine and...
Who's played by Queen Latifah. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah. His character definitely stands out because he just had great lines in the film, but just more so for what he represented.
Yeah.
You know, if the only representation in the film was Ren and Ten, then that would be a major disservice. But he played a character that was so fully hip hop. You got to see both sides of the conundrum that we had in front of us. You know, you have a guy who's like in the culture in such a way that doesn't care about making a buck. You want to. That's great when it happens, if it happens. But ultimately, you're doing this because, you know, you need to do it. And I think I connected that because I needed to see that. I needed to see that there's still a voice for that type of artistry.
What's up, man? What you doing here?
Actually, I'm starting my own label. And somebody told me that this real nice MC works here. You know him? I'm looking for some real stuff.
I don't get you, man. One day you all shiny suited up. The next day, you here at the garage looking for the raw
shit. Well, what you got going on, man? What? You waiting for some label to come and scoop you? What's your hook?
That's the difference between me and you, dog. I don't need no hook. My skills is my hook.
You're an MC that drives a cab. A taxi cab.
Let me tell you something. First of all, I got a job. I ain't come to Millennium asking you for shit.
Hey, man,
you
I got a job here. Too, all right? But I ain't too proud to ask for help.
Maybe you should be more proud, because your rep is like this. Come on, man. I know you was coming out here to do, man. Just signed the hip-hop cartoon puppies. You think you could rock with me?
All right, man.
So since seeing this movie as a college student, how has it continued to inform and educate you? I mean, how has it continued to grow with you as you've become a man in your 30s and a father and a husband, and continue to grow as an artist as well?
You know, there was a time where I claimed hip hop was dead. I think we all were saying that at some point because it didn't look like what we grew up with. But somehow it persisted. And even though we thought it was flatlining, it actually had a very healthy heartbeat. The underground movement was still there, still very strong, and people were still saying, we want something real. We want something true. We want something innovative that pushes boundaries still, but still tells our story, still tells a story that we're interested in. That's still not, you know, completely wanting to achieve commercial success. And I think at this stage in my life, I'm comfortable with where hip hop is. I don't think I can say it in good conscience that there's no good hip hop out there. There's a lot of amazing artists out there. I don't think I need to rest my hat for that only from hip hop.
Mm.
I think there's enough beautiful music out there to be able to diversify it. So I think at this stage in my life, I know better than to expect it all from one place because the energy is different. And, you know, we have kids now.
Yeah.
And you have to be intentional about what you hear and what you let in because that energy really impacts your day.
Yeah, I love when you were emailing back and forth with Maya about Brown Sugar, and Maya's the lead producer for this podcast. You wrote her saying, I love this, you said, since watching this movie the first time and each subsequent viewing since then, I find myself reliving the wonder of the expansion of my appreciation and naivete when it comes to love and hip hop. Love in my 30s has become something different, and music, including hip hop, and what I want from it has become something different.
That's so true. I'm glad I wrote that down. I forgot that I said that, but I'm glad
See?
I wrote that
Isn't
down.
Isn't this great? You are a poet, so my friend. True. You are a poet.
Oh, thank you.
Just like a bird flies, rising high above the trees. It's about time to let your love run away with me. But bring your heart. Everybody wants me to be what they want me to be.
Nick George is an author, poet, and the founder of The Listening Inc., a community organization that connects the performing arts to healing, mentoring, and social impact. Nick is also an adjunct professor at Central Virginia Community College. You can hear more of his wonderful storytelling wisdom in his TEDx talk, Revenge of the Snap. Brown Sugar was produced by Magic Johnson and Peter Heller and distributed by Fox Searchlight Pictures. The clips you heard in this episode are credited entirely to them. MCA Records released the excellent soundtrack that we featured all throughout this episode, with artists like Mos Def, Erykah Badu, Jill Scott, Mary J. Blige. Do yourself a favor and add this one to your playlist.
We here, we here, we
yes,
here.
Yes.
Fire code. Yes.
Next time on This Movie Changed Me, we'll be talking about one of my favorite movies, Mike Leigh's Career Girls. Unfortunately, this movie is pretty hard to find streaming anywhere, and I'd lend you my DVD copy, but I only have one. We recommend investigating at your local library or finding a secondhand copy on eBay. The team behind This Movie Changed Me is
Maya Tarrell,
Chris Hegel,
Tony Liu,
Kristen Lin,
and Lillian Vo.
This podcast is produced by On Being Studios, which is located on Dakota land. We also produce other podcasts you might enjoy, like On Being with Krista Tippett and Becoming Wise. Find those wherever you like to listen or visit us at onbeing.org to find out more. I'm Lily Percy, and I'm off to watch all of Sanaa Lathan's movies again because I am completely in love with her.
Stop.
Yeah.
Stop.
Most strong.
Stop.
This podcast is produced by On Being Studios in Minneapolis, Minnesota.